I mean, conservative in the sense of the standard answer to everything is no.
Yeah.
There's, if you come up with a new idea, there are 10 people who are going to tell you why it can never be done. You know, I love to play basketball. That was great. I love to, but eventually, you know, martial arts attracted me for the discipline aspect of it. You don't get to be a legend by being normal.
Yeah.
Because that's what it is, right? It's like, yeah. Even the best guy in the world in any one field is only the best for, there's a real short timeline there, you know? It's like the goal here is not to get the more, you know, the brand, the designer, the pressure medication instead of the generic brand. You know, the goal is to be happy, right? I mean, sometime in your life you have to hustle, and that's good at that time. Yeah. Not as a sustainable strategy forever. No, in fact, quality of life is where you win. Yeah. All the other stuff are the fake image of winning, you know? Yeah.
Welcome to the 154th episode of the I Love Success podcast. I just want to take a moment to say thank you for being part of our mission. Thank you for leading with the heart and having the courage to go out in the world and live a full life. Thank you for being kind, thank you for being open, and thank you for being you. I could never do this without you and all the incredible people that share so open-heartedly on the show. The journey continues, and as you know by now, our mission is to help at least 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. This week, I'm honored to sit down with a true martial artist and a history professor and podcaster originally from Milano, Italy. He's a man with a deep understanding for history and a lover of the art in martial arts. 8 years ago, he lost his wife, Elizabeth, only 36 years old, after being diagnosed with a brain tumor. Faced with loss, he had to find a way to survive and raise their 19-month-old daughter, Isabella, as a single parent. Through martial arts and his inner strength, he found a way to survive. Let's welcome a man I truly admire, Daniele Bolelli. Welcome, Daniele, to the I Love Success podcast.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Yeah, I just want to talk about, we were just talking before, like how martial artists usually are on time, they're very disciplined people. Like, where do you think that comes from?
I think a lot of, like, one of the beauty of martial arts, one of the beautiful things about it is that there's no mystery. You see the time you put in, the effort you put in lead to certain results. So it kind of, I mean, this applies to all sports, but in martial arts in particular, because it's rooted in the idea of conflict. And conflict is what we deal with all the time in life. So getting that discipline, getting that sense of responsibility for I am ultimately responsible for at least partially the outcome of situations. Because, you know, of course, there are things you don't control in life, and that's a given, you know. But to some degree, you do have a little bit of control. And the little bit, the way you can carve the little bit to increase is through discipline, is through responsibility, is through if you say something, you'll do it, that kind of thing. So I think a practice where you see objective results being very much dependent on your time and effort help, you know, discipline doesn't sound like a bad word anymore. It sounds like something that, hey, this is what helps me get stuff done.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And a lot of people don't like the word discipline, but
sure.
For me, discipline is freedom, right?
Yeah.
Because when I can control myself and my life, that creates freedom instead of being dependent on what everybody else are telling me all the time, right?
Of course. I mean, there's so much we don't control in life. Most we don't control in life. So for us to be able to expand a little bit that range, you know, the little bit where you do have some control, to be able to push the boundaries and expand it through discipline is one of the tools that allow you to do it.
Yeah. What do you think, Daniele, about taking responsibility for everything you do in life? A couple of years ago, I started taking responsibility for everything that happened in my life. Not saying everything is my fault,
but as
in a way, I put myself in that situation, and I, instead of blaming others, I could move forward. What's your opinion about that, and how have you dealt with that in your own life?
I think clearly super important, and it's ultimately the only attitude that is going to allow you to get stuff done and not just wallow in self-pity. At the same time, the only thing that I would add to that, because I agree wholeheartedly with what you said, is there's like sometimes people tend to emphasize personal responsibility, end up dismissing the fact that the cards you are given do play a role in it. And so to me, it's like, as long as we acknowledge that not everybody gets the same card, that the cards are given maybe crap and, you know, this is what you got, then from that point forward, taking responsibility, saying, okay, but the cards don't determine the game. They influence it, for sure, but I still have a little bit of agency and I'm going to work on that and I'm going to take responsibility for that. I think that's perfect. Yeah. Sometimes people tend to skip that step. Yeah. And so they go from, everything is for the best, just work hard. And it's like, whoa, slow down. Let's acknowledge the fact that some things that happen are sometimes bad and they are out of your control. You know?
I agree with you. I don't know if you've seen that video when they have a lineup on a football field and they ask people like, who had a parent who went to college, went in prison. And you see that we don't start the race at the same time. And I'm an immigrant myself. My father came to Sweden when he was a kid, and he always told me, like, you have to work twice as hard. It's not a plain field, even if you think about that. But once you know that and say, hey, this is not going to define what I'm doing in my life, I'm still going to go for it, that's something that I love. Daniele, I'm curious, like, can you just talk about growing up in Milano? Sure. Like, how was life? What did you dream about as a kid? And how did you end up in California? Sure.
Growing up for me, I was born in 1974. So I was in Milan from the time I was born through 1992. So that's kind of the time frame for me being raised there. And it's funny because when I go back now, I like it so much more. Partially because I don't take it for granted, partially because they cleaned up the city a lot, partially because my dad lives in a much nicer part of town, because I remember growing up, I was like, people here, oh, Milano, fashion capital of the world. I would look outside the window, I'm like, not quite. That's not
over here.
It was bad. Yeah. It was really like poor, crappy area of town. Yeah. And so it was, but you know, the thing that I enjoyed growing up is that my dad made some interesting life choices where, you know, it led to the fact that he would have very little money, but it also led to the fact that he had a ton of time to spend with me. And as a kid, that goes a long way. You know, that was huge. It's like, as much as it would have been nice to be able to afford certain things that most other kids could afford, the fact that I had a dad who was there all the time for me, was around with, you know, made me a priority, was huge, you know. And so that was something that clearly shaped my whole experience of my childhood, my, you know, living in Milan and everything else. But yeah, Milan was an interesting, it's an interesting place. I know, like, when I came, I didn't particularly like education in Italy, but when I moved to US after high school and I came and I started college here, I was like, this is college? You're kidding me? This is a piece of cake, you know? Because the Italian high school was so brutally hard that by comparison, college, I was like, okay, this is not a big deal, you know? This is going to be easy. And I think part of the reason why I did it in the first place and chose to move out here is that one of the things I don't like about Italy is that it's very conservative. And I don't mean politically conservative. I mean conservative in the sense of the standard answer to everything is no. Yeah. There's, if you come up with a new idea, there are 10 people who are going to tell you why it can never be done. Yeah. One thing I appreciated about life in US was that people sometimes that tended to take risks, even when it would be wise not to, even when it's like, really, you're going to say yes to that idea? Not so sure about it. But, you know, the way I see it, I prefer stupid enthusiasm over intelligent cynicism any day, you know, because it's with misguided enthusiasm you can work with, you know, you can turn it into not being misguided. Cynicism, no matter how smart it is, doesn't lead to anything. You know, there's no room for growth. So, you know, growing up, I could see what basically my life in Italy could entail for the next few decades. And it wouldn't be terrible, but it would also be very predictable, very limited in the horizons and everything else. Yeah. Whereas US, and why US specifically, I think it boils down to, you know, where we are at right now. We are within a few miles of, like, the cultural capital of the world. For better or worse, whether people like it or not, you know, Hollywood movies, the music that is produced within a few miles from here, all of that stuff is what most of the world consumes. So I was interested in the idea of like, what would it be like to be sort of in the center of the empire where all these crazy things are happening all around you? And so I was like, yeah, worth a shot.
Awesome. Yeah, I had the podcast that I released Sunday, episode 152 with Peter Lorimer. He said, perfection crush success. Mm-hmm. And I was like, that's so good, because a lot of times myself, I overthink things. And then I see, it's almost like in the bar. I don't know if you remember when I was younger, it used to be like, I'm planning how I'm going to talk to this girl. I was so afraid. And until I did that plan, some cool dude just said something that was super weird and they just walked away.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the fuck happened?
Of course.
So I don't know. Sometimes risk is good, right?
Yeah. There's something to be said about action and not overthinking. You know, US, culturally speaking, US tend to be a lot action oriented with a lot without that much of the thinking behind it. Yeah. Europe, Italy, definitely Europe in general tend to be really heavy on the thinking without that much action.
Yeah.
In an ideal world, you have both. You know, that's how you want it to be.
Yeah.
But if I have to choose, I rather moving. I rather see some kind of action than have 10 million good reasons why we shouldn't do anything, you know?
This reminds me, I was training with the Machida brothers this weekend and his father in Lomita, and we're talking about Sanshin. I don't know if you know that awareness. Mm-hmm. We translate for people who don't know martial arts. Sanshin is a state of awareness, and that's, you are constantly in the moment, you're ready to take action when the opportunity arrives, but you don't need to take action. How do you get to that state in everyday life without being a warrior or a fighter?
I think it's like some people just pick it up intuitively. Some people have a practice, and the practice can be anything, right? Yeah. Some people can get it through something as more mellow as meditation. Some people can be, and vice versa, you know, some people can be involved in 10,000 practices and be great at that practice, but without really being able to apply those lessons to everyday life, you know. To me, it's like anything, any art, and I use the word art in a very loose sense, any real skill that takes time and energy to develop can teach you the same lessons. Because ultimately, life is one, and those are just different ways to get to the same thing. So if you could be surfing, and you could learn a lot about life, because it's the exact same thing, right? It's about awareness, it's about timing, it's about being able to make a split-second decision and adjust depending on the context that's constantly changing. That's life right there. So you could just do it to become a great surfer, or you could do it to learn it and then apply it to everyday life.
Yeah.
So I think that's a skill in itself, is to be able to make, well, first is to actually become good at something.
Yeah.
But then is also to be able to make the transition from being good at one thing and take those lessons and apply them to everything.
Is it important to be good at something?
I think it is. Because for one, just in terms of self-esteem, in terms of, you know, you have seen that work pays off, that putting the time and energy in leads to something and it's not just you're wasting your time. And also, it's probably going to be hard to learn a lesson unless you have seen it applied. You have seen yourself be able to pull it off, you know. What confidence would you have that it's going to work out in life if it has never worked out for you in any field, you know? It's like, so picking up something that you enjoy, that you develop your craft and you gain some skill in, pretty important.
Yeah. And what do you want to say to people who haven't found that thing yet?
I would say make a list, you know, take a month, write down anytime something comes to mind, make a list of all the stuff that if you had 10,000 lives to live, you would like to learn, you would like to dedicate time to, you'll think like, oh, that would be fun. And, you know, most of the list is stuff that you're never going to do. A bunch of this stuff is unrealistic. A bunch of this stuff you'll have no time for. But out of whatever many 20, 30, 40 things you're going to write down, something's going to click, right? Something is going to make sense where it's like, oh, there are these two or three things that is realistic for me to try out.
Yeah.
Let's go try, you know? And ultimately, you need to have fun, right? You need to see if when you go in and experience it for yourself is actually enjoyable or not.
Yeah.
And but again, there's no way to know which one is gonna be it, you know, because unless you are born with this obsessive passion for one thing, which is kind of weird in itself, you just need to try out stuff, you know.
I agree. And I'm curious, you're a history professor, which in a sense could be said, feel like nerdy in a way, which is super cool, but you're also a martial artist.
Sure.
Like, can you just, how did you tie these together? Like, how did you start? Because it's so cool.
Speaking of, I guess it's very related to the question you just asked, because to me, by nature, by environment, by how I grew up, I had a very nerdy background. You know, I was reading a ton of books as a kid. I was an only child, so I would spend a ton of time by myself just imagining stories and being in my head a lot. My dad is a writer. My mom was a journalist. You know, like everything was connected with like some kind of creative, nerdy activity, which is great. But I was like, I need something else. You know, because I know I'm good at that. I know I can do that well. That's great and all. But I also need to... I'm too divorced from physical reality. I'm too stuck in my head. And so, you know, I love to play basketball. That was great. I love to... But eventually, you know, martial arts attracted me for the discipline aspect of it, for something where in martial arts, nobody cares how well-spoken I may be or how I can write a great... paper or something. It's like that really doesn't apply here.
Yeah.
The only thing that matters is how you're going to be able to embody that, you know, whatever principle, whatever philosophy, whatever ideals, they need to be embodied in the here and now. And so I dug that because it was something that my upbringing kind of sorely lacked.
Yeah.
And so it was a way for me to sort of balance out. You know, you know, if I'm around people who all they do is pump iron, after a while it's like, okay, that's great and all, but there's more to life.
Yeah.
But by the same token, if I'm around people who are in the books all the time and know nothing else, I'm like, you're smart, you're sweet, you're nice, but my God, there's a physical world out there that you should be part of.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, it's super important for anybody to develop both to some degree, you know, because that's life.
No, I agree with you. And my philosophy and what I'm working on is to be able to walk away early. Almost like if we look as an example, the stock market, if you're peaking, you're probably going to lose because you can do that once or twice.
Yeah.
But if you're close to the top, you can do that many times.
Sure.
Right. But I agree with you. It's really hard because you love that feeling of being good. You love people clapping. You love your ego. How did it feel to become a dad?
It's interesting because there's such a mirror placed in front of your face there. Because, you know, a kid is a kid, you know. They have they have their personality, of course, but ultimately a lot of what you get back is what you put in, you know. It's like kids are going to push all your buttons. Even good kids, let alone if the kid is difficult, but any good kid is going to push all your buttons. You're going to be tired, you're going to be frustrated, you're going to, you know, things that you want to happen that seem reasonable and simple, they're not reasonable and simple with a baby.
Yeah.
And so it's, you really quickly, I mean, anytime, you know, you think you are... I got it all together. It's like, hang out with a one-year-old for enough days and see how well together you have it, you know, because it's rough, you know. It's like of course, it gets so much easier with age if you raise them right, because then you can reason, you can think about things through. Kids have no filter, you know, babies have no filter. They're not going to do something for you because they think they're just reacting the moment. And so it's... it teaches real quick where you're really at.
Yeah.
You know, if you're able to keep your cool with a baby, you're probably going to be able to keep your cool in 99% of situations, you know?
Does martial art help?
Yeah, I mean, but I think it's like, that's interesting too, because there are times where I was like, man, I'm better than this. Why the hell am I reacting this way? Why am I getting edgy over a little thing? Why am I... And that's when you look at it and you're like, yeah, I'm not better than this. Yeah. This is what it is. This is the reality. I'm better than this in certain situations, but it's certain buttons I'm not used to dealing with them. And when you push them, I don't know how to deal with it well.
Yeah.
And I need to learn. And so it's like, okay, here we go, you know. But at the same time, it's awesome because, you know, kids can also be, I mean, ridiculously sweet and amazing and wonderful in so many ways. So it's one of those things where it can be really amazing and monstrously tired and frustrating all at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting what you're saying. You are how you act in that situation, uh-huh. because sometimes when we see this picture of who we are as human beings, we always look at our best self, of how course. We act when we are happy, mm-hmm. when we won, when the economy is good.
Sure.
But who you really are is when shit hits the fan, right? That really shows how you can react. And it's very hard to act well when life is not going your way.
Yeah. That's why, to me, like, one of the things that I admire the most is that ability. And, you know, act well is we can define it in so many ways. Yeah. But, like, for example, the ability to be kind at times when life is not kind. That's amazing. Yeah. That's like, because, you know,
getting goosebumps.
Yeah, I mean, being kind is such a powerful, awesome thing. And, you know, not everybody can do it under the best circumstances. Yeah. But under the best circumstances, if you're a decent human being, at some point you will shine through, right?
Yeah.
But when the circumstances are average or when the circumstances are downright awful, to find a way to be kind in that situation, that to me is amazing. That to me is like, okay, if you can do that, you can probably do anything else.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the natural reaction as animals that we are is that when you're hurt, you are so much more ready to claw. You know, your defenses are up, you are nervous, you're edgy, you're keeping everything at bay. So to instead lower them enough to be truly gentle and kind and try to be nice to somebody else when you are hurt, not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, that's very admirable.
Yeah, and that's what I love. That's what inspires me. You know, anytime you see examples of that, I'm like, that's beautiful right there. Yeah, that's what I want to see.
Yeah. Daniela, do you remember, how did you find out that your wife was sick?
So started out in a really mellow way. You know, she was like, woke up one day, my shoulder hurts. I'm like, okay, you held the baby wrong, or who the hell knows what happened? You know, it's like, no big deal, right? Like, all of us have those things happen all the time and nothing comes out of it. And then, so like 1 month goes by and, it's still there. That's interesting, but nothing big, right? Yeah. And then it started, now my leg on the same side is hurting and acting up a little weird. And it's like, okay, that's different from I pull a tendon. That's some more like a neurological thing. So that's a different kind of issue. And symptoms got worse at a speed that was pretty insane. It was super, like, she went from being in peak physical shape, strong, healthy, athletic, to crashing really fast, like in a span of 3 months, she could hardly walk. She was, I was literally carrying her up and down the stairs because she was like in such a frail physical condition. And at the time, because everything happened so quickly, they didn't really, you know, initially they thought it was a particularly bad onset of multiple sclerosis, which sucks, but of course is heaven compared to brain tumor, you know. So, you know, initially we thought, okay, this is terrible, but maybe we'll figure it out, and there's, you know, multiple sclerosis, people live with it, and there's ways things you can do about it, and it's fine, right? Not good, not ideal, but okay, there's something to be done with it. And things kept getting so much worse so quickly that eventually, you know, they figured out, oops, not multiple sclerosis, brain tumor, super aggressive, fast growing, advanced stage, and in a place where it cannot be operated. So I was like, okay, you know. And their thing was like, okay, we can do this, that, and the other to help you last, you know, maybe you can last a year or two. And he was like, no, thanks. Yeah. You know, for this quality of life, it sucks. Yeah. You are going to be, as you're like, our daughter at the time, I was about a year and a half old, is like, for what? So that she can become progressively more aware of this horrendous stuff happening around her. I was like, so she's like, no, I'm not doing anything. And she was like, nope, I'm checking out. That's it. And so to me, like, one thing that it left me with is a heavy sense of hypochondria. and heavy sand, because you know, you see somebody so healthy go where everything turns into a nightmare so quickly. So that then the next time you have a cough, you're like, oh yeah. My God, this is the beginning of the end, you know? And of course, it's totally irrational, except that you have seen it happen just like that. Yeah. So, you know, 99.9% of chances is not going to be anything like that. It's a stupid flu, or it's a cough, or it's whatever, or it's nothing, right? Yeah. But then there's the one time when it isn't. And so it has been really hard for me to make the mental switch to not feel that way. You know, too, because of course that's so apocalyptic that like my brain has always been around like what she must have felt, you know, when you know you're not gonna see your kid ever again, when you know that you're. So, you know, it's heavy stuff. Yeah, it's really heavy stuff.
It is. And your wife, she decided to stay at home, right?
Yeah. She was like.
And how was the last couple of weeks together?
I mean, she was in an odd kind of way. She was in a mostly really good frame of mind.
Yeah.
She was way more relaxed than she had ever been. She was way kinder than she had ever been. She was, that side of her that was the good side was there way most of the time.
Yeah.
In a way that was amazing to watch.
Yeah.
She had their moments of, you know, especially at night, in the middle of the night, where your rationality kind of declines a little bit and she wasn't sleeping much, where you would be like more fear-driven and panicky. But then as soon as that would subside, then she would go back to this stage that was really very blissful in some way.
Yeah, I'm so sorry for your loss.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things that's the thing, though, that we forget that is happens a lot, you know, happens. I would venture to say that, I mean, if you live long enough, everybody experiences horrible things. But even if you don't live long enough, like take a room with 100 people, how many of them have experienced something fairly horrendous?
Yeah.
I would bet that that number is pretty high. You know, whether it's the death of a loved one, whether it is some kind of trauma in their childhood, whether it is, you know, it can show up in many forms, but some really heavy scarring trauma, I think, is way more common than sometimes we think.
Yeah, it is. We all have our scars.
Yep.
And something I ask all my guests, and that is, right after this podcast, what can the people that watched and listened to this do to start going after their dreams? One thing that they should do right now.
I think probably step one would be define what your goals are, making sure, in relation to what we were just saying, making sure that the you achieve those goals is a happy you.
Yeah.
And what will the happiness look like? Oh, I got the big job. Oh, I have that much money in the bank. Oh, I have that. That's great.
Yeah.
Congrats. That's not telling me that you're going to be happy.
Yeah.
It's like, how are you going to be happy when you get there? Because that's one of the problems, is that it's so easy for it to turn into a drug, where you are addicted to the experience of climbing and you want to keep climbing without realizing that all your climbing was done to get to a point where you could look around and go like, this is amazing. And it's like, you got to that point and everything is amazing around you, and you're like, no, I need to keep climbing. It's like, that's mistaking the process for what you are actually doing it for. So I think constructing an image of what your happiness looks like, in every level, financial, family-wise, relationships, how you get to spend your time, how much free time you have, really just picturing your ideal life and figuring out what are the steps required to get there, what are the potential pitfalls, where can take you off track.
Yeah.
And I think that's important, because I think most people chase a certain image of success that does not equal happiness. They chase it because they have been told that that will make them happy, not because they have really put themselves in that place and realized, man, that's the lifestyle I want, you know? And so that's where, I guess, back to where I started in some way, like when we're talking about kind of like some of the choices that my father made. They are weird choices, you know. They are choices where he chose to work in a way where only doing stuff enjoyed in a creative field, where good luck making money doing that, you know. He barely paid the bills and stayed barely there. And he would have people who come visit him and be like, oh my God, you have such an amazing life. I wish I was like you. And he would feel bad and try to give them tips and help them out. And then you realize this guy has in the bank about 45 times what you got. And he's whining about, oh, how lucky you are that you got this great life. It's like, that's not luck, that's a choice. Yeah. And it's a choice that comes at a price, and not everybody's going to want to pay that price. And it's fine. You know, if you don't want to pay the price, you should know yourself and know that that's not going to make you happy. But also know that that is an option. That success doesn't come in just it's one size fit all for everybody. Yeah. And so really defining what it means for you to be successful, what it means for you to be happy, and be as specific as you can, really about relationship, money, practical conditions around you, free time, all of those things. You should be real clear on that image.
I love that. It almost feels like you read the gold book that I wrote. I'm going to give you one. It was a great summary.
Perfect.
Daniele Bolelli, I love just saying that. And I listened to one of your episodes with Joe Rogan, and he was like, feels like you're baking pizza when
right?
you talk.
Yeah.
But you have this amazing personality, and only you know what you have been through. So thank you for sharing this with me.
Thank you.
Truly appreciate it. And if people want to learn more about you and listen to your podcast, where can they find you?
I think, you know, a good start is when you put your episode notes, you're going to have my name spelled correctly. And with that, Google will help you. Yeah. And, you know, there's like, I host a couple of different podcasts, Drunken Taoist podcast, History on Fire podcast. I have some books out. But again, it's the kind of stuff that will... The gods of the internet will be kind
will
to you and
you.
They will pop up.
Awesome. We'll do that. And yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you everybody for watching and listening to this episode with Daniele Bolelli. We're on a big mission to help at least 10 million people in 10 years to achieve their dreams. And I can't do it myself. That's why I have amazing people like Daniele here. If you like the mission we're on, if this is helping you, share this with someone that needs to hear this message. Give us a review on iTunes and check us out at ilovesuccess.co. I'll give you a couple of free chapters off my book. And you have more than 150 of these amazing conversations with game changers and people that are redefining success and going after what they want. We're here to help. Take care and talk to you soon.